And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Hook Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, Senior Lakers Insider for Clutch Points. Joined on this fine Friday afternoon, your favorite day of the week, by Pete Zayas. This is going to be the first of hopefully many of these Friday afternoon chats between he and I. We've been trying to figure out a way to do a regular show together for a while now, and it seems like this is going to work out here for the time being. Pete, thank you very much for hopping on, and let's do it, man.
Excited to join you, man. Let's get to it.
All right, today on the show, we are going to be talking about the offseason. Well, it's an amalgamation of everything, right? And I think we're going to lay the foundation of the conversation with how would we feel about an offseason where the Lakers mostly run it back? And I think that will allow us to like look back on the season that they had and the issues that they had that led to them being eliminated in the first round. We could talk about the limitations that would set on their offseason, why I think this is one of the more likelier outcomes to this offseason and all of that good stuff. And then that also allows us to talk about internal improvements that the Lakers have to make. And then finally, if there's time, I want to talk about what's at stake this offseason and if the Lakers are in the middle of a supposed title window. So a whole bunch of stuff to get to today. Quick reminder, please hit that subscribe button. Please hit that like button. Please hit that share button. All the nice buttons. Just hit those ones and then we're good. And then if you guys are listening to this in the pod form, hit subscribe wherever it is that you get your podcast, preferably on Odyssey, because we are company men. All right, let's start with that question, Pete. To quote the philosopher Harrison Fagan,
run it back, run it back, run it back, run it back, run it back.
You excited about that?
Not at all. That's at a championship parade. That's not exactly how our season ended.
Fair point. That is a very fair point. Here's why I think this is somewhat likely, and jump in at any time. The Lakers only have one first round pick at their disposal, and Rob Pelinka doesn't typically like to enter a season without at least one first rounder in his back pocket.
Correct.
They only have one second rounder available right now. They could buy a second rounder potentially, but the price on those has really increased as this new CBA has kind of dictated. Those were pretty expensive or valuable, those second round picks. But just in case, the Lakers could potentially buy in like the 40th pick area. Number 55 pick is what they have to work with. They have plenty of expiring contracts. They do have Dalton Connect, who is a youngish prospect. They have rotation players in Austin Reeves and Rui Hachimura who could bring back some value there. But as has been reported at length, I've talked about this a lot. I know you guys have talked about this on LFR quite a bit. Seems incredibly unlikely Austin is on the move this summer. Mm-hmm. So that leaves Rui, a first rounder potentially, or the number 55 pick in the draft, and then expiring contracts beyond that to do anything in the trade market. In terms of free agency, all they have is the taxpayer mid-level exception, probably, because I don't think there are very many avenues to get below the first apron. Mm-hmm. I just don't see very many tools here to make significant improvements to the roster. And therefore, I think it's probably likelier that we have a quieter offseason than I think fans were hoping for. Are you there with me through all of that?
Most of the way, I think one tool that you didn't hit is important is financial relief that you can provide to other teams. There are a number of teams, especially under the new CBA, that find themselves needing to make a move to achieve a level of financial flexibility, even amongst the upper echelon teams. Then there's a whole nother class that half the league made trades with each other at this last trade deadline. This is the first chance for San Antonio to build a team around a concept around De'Aaron Fox, right? First chance that the Warriors have an offseason around Jimmy Butler. Several teams have made big trades where this is the first transaction cycle after that trade that they can really kind of like shape their team. Pelinka talked about this a little bit going in the final exit interview that they did, expecting there to be a lot of movement this summer. And between the financial pressures that are on a few teams, you also have a couple of teams that, like Sacramento and New Orleans, you don't hire a new GM to be like, all right, let's just run it back with the guys that we have. You know what I mean? They're there to make some moves and get into business. Dallas jumping way up, San Antonio jumping up in the draft, that's going to have implications and things like that. And so I think that what the Lakers have to provide that's most valuable are expiring contracts. Now, those are more valuable at the trade deadline because the value doesn't really convey until after the season, right? So there's no pressure on the team trading for the expiring contract to do it now as opposed to February. However, if there's going to be a bunch of deals made anyway, like one guy that's come to mind as a he could start for us and be helpful at a position in need would be KCP, right? Orlando's kind of stuck where they're at in terms of financial commitments and contracts that they have committed, where a Gabe and a Kleba could, you could get a guy, I think, like KCP, and actually, you know, that's a starting caliber player that they probably want to get out of his money. They signed him to a 3-year deal last year. I think there are routes, and so that's the other tool, right? I agree with you. We don't have a ton in the way of draft capital or young picks or things like that, but I do think the multitude of expiring contracts that the Lakers have, they can make a deal all the way from a small one all the way up through a $40 million player.
The KCP thing is interesting. He didn't look great last year, but I think part of that was they had zero creation on the perimeter. Like their guards were very defensive oriented, and Paolo and Franz are both kind of young when it comes to creating for others, and
they get their own. KCP
needs to have the table set for him.
Yeah.
So I think that was part of why he didn't look that great defensively. There was a little slippage because of his own slippage athletically. And that's probably why he could potentially be available. I think if that was to come to be potentially, that seems like something they would maybe want to do in the off season so that they have a whole season to potentially reutilize those expiring contracts, you know, close to the deadline or throughout the year. So I guess that's a possibility there. And that is very much a position of need. So,
they need a five, Anthony, and they're saying it to anybody who will listen. Like, you probably piss off Luka and LeBron if, like, just here's Jackson Hayes again in a mustache or whatever they plan on running. You know what I'm saying? If you run it back, like, how do you look at LeBron and Luka? Like, Jackson,
do the weaves, get a haircut.
Here's Jackson Jays, our new five. You know, like,
yeah.
You can't come back with the same five.
It's Christian Coloco, but it's right. The K instead of the C. I want to be clear. When I say like run it back, I mean that more as like the core, you know, running the core back, running back the top four players, for example, of LeBron, Luka, Austin, and Rui. Based on the conversations I've had, it's really kind of split how the Lakers feel about trading Rui. Mm-hmm. I'm actually pretty split about trading Rui.
That's what we did. Honestly, we just recorded our pod today on LFR called Rui's Future.
Yeah. Okay.
You also look at it from who are the Lakers' best players and what position do they defend? Lakers have a lot of natural forwards. And fours, right? And so they don't have team control over DFS. They're not trading LeBron or Luka.
Yeah.
You know, we always talk about what a great contract Austin is, and he is. He's still our most well-paid guard. We don't pay any guards more than we pay Austin Reeves. That's how much money we have in the front court. So both in terms of the roster, in terms of the Lakers on a spreadsheet, in several ways, there's sort of this imbalance on the team where I think they like Rui. I like Rui. There's a reason why they're split, but I think a lot of things kind of lead to that door of, I mean, you got to get to some balance somehow, and he's the guy with the biggest contract in that too.
Yeah, it's also a pretty good contract. Right. It's only like another year. It's an expiring contract.
Expiring at 18.3, you know? I believe. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I guess a team that trades for him might be a little nervous about paying him. So I guess there's that. But he was so good in the playoffs this last year and in two of the 3 years that he's been a Laker that I think I wouldn't be that torn up about paying him potentially moving forward. There's a trade that I just put on Twitter for a second ago. And one of the things that I really look for is, a mixed reaction to it. Like if Lakers fans,
one of your favorite things in life. Yeah.
Well, if Lakers fans like the trade too much, it's a bad trade, right? The other team probably is going to hate the trade. Yeah. And then if Lakers fans hate it too much, then it's like, okay, maybe dial it back a little bit. But in this case, I've had everything from cannot stand this dude for the life of me. Is Anthony Irwin cooking? And like, that's the spectrum that we've gotten so far and everything in between.
All right.
So the trade as I've put it together is the Lakers get Nick Claxton from Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. They send Rui. They send Dalton. They send Shake, and they send the 55th pick. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that sounds if you're going to move Rui, like, it's got to come. You got to get a legit starter back. And
yeah,
when you talk about like, what do the Lakers need at the five spot, at that big man spot? I think defense is the first thing that comes to mind, and Claxton has some switchability, has some rim protection. There is some question, like, he doesn't weigh a whole heck of a lot. Can you move him around the rim? But I do think that if
Redick, he weighs less than I do.
if Redick wants to run a switching scheme, the ability of your bigs on the perimeter and your guards on the interior, all of that stuff matters, while still being able to run a drop coverage. And he's solid in that. Like, he's not a perfect player, but his contract is declining. I think he's at 25 or 25.3, something like that this year, but it goes down to 20 something. And so it's a good deal on the books. It's also something that it's a short term, but also a long term type of play, in that he is helpful on a LeBron and Luka team, but also once LeBron moves on, then you can see him being helpful next to Luka as well. So I like Claxton. I'm not thrilled about the idea of giving a $25 million, but if we did, he's probably my favorite of that group that isn't like paying Bam $55 million or whatever he's due to make in a couple of years.
I'm nervous about the size issue, the bulk issue with Claxton, because we've just seen how important physicality is in this postseason.
Jared Allen, just, we saw what happens to guys like him of that build. Yeah.
Do you think he went to Jared Allen, like, sat down at the little presser thing, and before he sat there, like, do not mention the brightness of the lights for, like, you can say anything you want, Jared, just don't say that. But yeah, I think if they do go out and get like a Claxton, I think you kind of have to use the taxpayer mid-level on a bulkier center. I think because of the way he played in that Houston series, or that Golden State Houston series, Adams probably priced himself out of the taxpayer mid-level. I think because of the way Cornet is playing, I think he's probably paid is a little out of that range too. But if you do that, I think you got to bring in somebody with some oomph there, whether it's with the taxpayer mid-level or with a veteran minimum contract. You got to bring in somebody who isn't going to be moved as easily as Claxton would be.
If that's the case, then you shouldn't be trading for Claxton in the first place, in my opinion. In that, like, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that once you've invested the $25 million in the five spot and one player, that those resources have to go somewhere else. And then that's just the two looks that you have, is that and a small ball look. But I don't think that they're going to put, we don't have a starting two. Who's our shooting guard on this team?
Austin.
He's our one.
Well, I mean,
okay. If he's our, then who's our one? If Austin's our two.
Luka. are you talking about like deep defending?
Yeah. Who guards the best player on the other team? Austin Reeves? Is that really the plan?
It went super well, Pete. What are you talking about?
It was actually most of the time poor Rui out on the perimeter, having to sort of do that.
Well, the problem was that they kept on giving up switches.
That's the plan. That's the whole plan, you know?
Well, but that's the thing, though, Pete, and that's why I kind of wanted to get back to, like, the notion of internal improvements. And I need to see more from J.J. Redick. You know, I listened to your guys' J.J. Redick pod on LFR. It was really, really good. And I agree with you guys that J.J. was phenomenal, grading in a curve or just outright in the regular season. And one of the things that he talked about after the season was, I want to coach the team that I have, or like, that's one of the strengths that I want to continue to showcase, is coaching the team that I have, not the team that I wanted or that I want. And I thought that was definitely true in the regular season. And I thought, as the temperature rose and the stakes got a little higher in the postseason, that became less the case. And that makes me a little nervous. Like I need to see JJ Redick with that more pressure applied, handle that kind of situation better. And one of the things that, you know, if the Lakers do go into next season with this core mostly intact, maybe Rui goes, if they fall back to Luka Ball, which is probably going to be the case, and Austin just becomes a 3-and-D wing essentially for you know, in terms of role, I don't think you're getting everything that you can out of Austin, and I don't think your team is as good as it needs to be. So what do you think about the notion of, or do you think the Lakers can see steps forward there in terms of, you know, finding more of a middle ground between the identity that we saw in the regular season and what we saw from them in the postseason, less switching and a better understanding of the things that they need to avoid defensively that highlight their weaknesses, as we saw in the postseason? Do you think we'll see enough internal improvement here from this team, whether they make the moves or not?
To do what, though? Enough to what? Win a championship?
To win a championship? To do better than the first round?
That's why. So I think you're going to see them try some things, and I think that the marginal moves and things like that are probably the first option. I think they need to take a hatchet to the team. I don't think that's the direction that they need to go in, but I don't think that this core is, you can win a championship with it. I don't think you can be athletic enough with the trio of LeBron, Luka, and Austin. I just think that you run into some fatal defensive issues, some sustainment, like possession to possession, foot speed type of stuff. And that's the thing. I keep looking through this team and, you know, I make all my lists of, oh, what if they did this or do that? Every road that I kind of go down, I end up in this place of, I like all the individual ingredients, but the way it all mixes together, right? Like as soon as we lost, it's like I'm bitching about how unathletic we are. And then 2 weeks later, I'm like, oh, now let's trade Rui. That's going to fix it. He's one of the most athletic dudes we have. You know what I'm saying? But it's also, if you look at it through the lens of the, we don't have a starting shooting guard and we don't have a starting five, then you start landing on certain, like, hey, they got to balance out the roster and things like that. And so, again, I keep trying to find these different routes. And I'm a pretty optimistic dude. I've always been someone that's like, hey, you got to figure it out. That's how you got to be as a coach, right? Is have that, these are the guys that I have. And eventually that at the end of this summer, that's what it's going to be. And we're going to try to find the best way for them to win off of that. But I think they should be taking a hatchet to the team. I don't think they will, but internal improvement, we weren't that close. We saw how that series went.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think that they're just a five away from being able to win a chip?
To win a championship, probably not. To more realistically vie for one, I don't know. But like, if that's all you're doing, then if your goal is like,
that's my question. Maybe, what are we trying to do, Anthony? What are we trying to accomplish?
Actually, that's a great question. That's a great question. Yeah.
If they're trying to be a respectable playoff team that competes and gets knocked out in the second round, you're well on track to doing that for the next couple of years, right? In the first or second round. But if they're actually trying to win championships, they've actually got to make moves.
Yeah. So when you say take a hatchet to the team, are you talking about turning guys into more picks down the line? Because this is one of the things that I keep coming back to as far as this offseason goes, is we know that they're already looking for Luka's 1A, you know, or second star. We know that that's a thing that they have their eye out on the market for. But you aren't going to get that player with one pick at your disposal. You know,
we got Luka with one pick.
Well, Nico lost his mind.
No, I feel like there's always this imaginary world.
They don't have an Anthony Davis to trade, though.
Right.
Like they don't have an Anthony. So like, even if we ignore the Nico part of this,
but the same, they don't we have an Anthony Davis. Anthony, we were having these same conversations about Russell Westbrook and his absolute untradeability a couple of years. And then the actual trade hit and it was nothing like what we were supposed to give up, a first and Russell Westbrook for John Wall.
Yeah. Well, that was ridiculous. I remember hearing about the trade, and I was asking around, like, this can't actually be the deal, because it was so far away. It was so far apart from what we thought it was going to
be. Because what people thought, what they talk about on Twitter, is on a totally different planet. The whole valuation of picks and trades, people perpetually get surprised on the trades the Lakers actually end up making, because it's like the value, what the Lakers have to offer this year are the expiring contracts. It's financial relief in a league that's going to be making probably a ton of moves, that's going to need, and so to take a hatchet to it, right? It could look a whole bunch of different ways. And obviously it'd be best to be like as good as we can be for now, while also building toward the future, which I do think getting a sustainable five is within that. But like, if there's going to be a whole bunch of moves around the league this summer, getting in as a third team on a deal and picking up a second round pick or two, because we're able to, you know, Shake Milton is able to provide $3 million of relief here and there. But it's more about setting the soil in a help, getting the soil in a healthy place for 26-27 is what I think this year should be in service of. I don't think that's the route they're going to take, so I'm not going to beat a dead horse about it. But I think this is a transition year where, again, every route that I try to take to get to a real contender, I have a hard time actually getting there.
Yeah, it's kind of like out here, grass goes dormant. And in order to get your lawn right for the upcoming year, you have to basically bick it. You have to go out and torch your lawn. And if you don't do that, now the new lawn that you're trying to bring in, it now has to compete against the dormant grass that was just sitting there all winter. And I think that's something that Pat Riley really struggles with. I think it's something that the Lakers are finding out that they really struggle with, is that notion of, and I hate doing it too, because it means I have to bag all of that dormant grass. It sucks. But it is something that you have to do. It is something that you have to, you know, like you said, get the soil ready, get the terrain ready, and level it out so that when that new grass comes in, and when you lay that seed, it's not for nothing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I the issue that I'm running into with the way that the Lakers are kind of talking about their offseason is this notion of like, well, LeBron has a no trade clause. Obviously, you're not trading Luka. Rui, you're a little bit more open to trading, not trading Austin unless you get an all-star back. And I think they're overvaluing Austin. I think they need to come to terms. Like, one of the points that Dan made in his piece that he just wrote the other day is like, the Lakers really like the story of Austin Reeves being the undrafted free agent and getting here to where he is, where he could potentially make an all-star game, is how the Lakers view him. And to me, it's like, yeah, that's a cool story, but cool story, bro, is a literal meme. Yeah, I don't care about the story. Go out and get me the guy that gets me closer to a championship, because Luka clearly isn't going anywhere. And I just like, whenever LeBron goes, I still think there's going to be an inherent athleticism disadvantage if you have Luka and Austin in the backcourt. So when you hear that, you know, when you hear the Lakers say pillar of the franchise, and the phrasing and the framing of, you know, trading Austin Reeves, I'm not saying that the Lakers need to trade him for anything or just for the sake of it, but I do think they need to dial back some of that rhetoric.
I don't think the rhetoric matters as much as the actual belief in it, right?
That's true.
Like the idea that he can be the third guy, you know, that's making $30 million on as the third pillar on a championship type of team. I don't think that's necessarily today's problem, but I do think that they made a mistake at the beginning of last year of like, Austin is a very good overall guard. He does a lot of different things well, but what would you say is his most reliable offensive skill? Like, what does he do most reliably at a high level? What would you think that is?
Ooh. To your point, I don't really know. Like,
he does a lot of things well, right? But there's nothing where it's like, oh, that's, it doesn't matter who's on him or high level defense. You can shut down any aspect of his game that you want. What's really special about him is he's good at a whole bunch of different things.
Yeah.
And so I thought they slotted him into a primary perimeter creator type of role by, you know, scaling back on D'Lo, which I understand that's its whole.
Yeah, I thought that was thing, the right move.
Yeah, that's the right move for sure. But they were such a, we're going to be saucy off the dribble and try to beat you one-on-one type of squad.
He's not that.
That like, well, he's got that to a certain degree. He's actually really good at that and has great shiftiness and all of that. But when you're right near the top of the scouting report and Anthony Edwards is guarding you followed by, you know, a very serious defensive team, of course there's a cap on that, that ideally he's not kind of pigeonholed into a role that you need him to be that. There was a desire to get more threes up this year from him that I thought they encouraged some bad shots out of him, you know? And so I think that if they slotted him back just one slot of this guy could be a really good starter on you're on a championship team rather than like the third best type of player that can move on the ball sometimes, off the ball other times, can defend at the one spot a little bit, but needs some support. I see more of that, but yeah, long-term him and Luka, I've got questions about that as well. I don't think they have to make that move now. And I agree with their perspective of like, we're not going to trade Austin unless it's for a really, really good player. I think that's correct.
That I think is correct. The scale to which we're talking about good versus really, really good or really, really, really good or how many reallys we're talking about here kind of matters. Raj and I had the definitive Austin Reeves conversation yesterday. And from here on out, nobody's allowed to talk about Austin. So I technically owe myself residuals for having this conversation with you. But the thing that I just keep coming back to is if, again, the goal, if the point is to win championships, the athleticism that we're seeing in the postseason right now isn't going anywhere.
No, it's not. Watch these games and talk to me.
You know, like right. I keep on hearing it's like, well, maybe Minnesota was just a really bad matchup. It's like those types of defenders are in this, like you're going to go through those kinds of defenders to get to a championship.
Look at Indiana.
Yeah,
that's a big part of how they got there. And there was just a possession by possession. It's not just defense. It's just like a steam, a play by play. Go, force. Go.
Yeah. 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 And I mean, look at Indiana, look at Boston with the two Jays on the wing. You have Derek White on that team as well. Now, Boston's era, I think, is pretty much over now because of the Tatum injury. And they're going to scale way back on the amount that they spent on the roster. So they'll look really different here moving forward. But I guess my point here with Austin, and this is actually one of the conversations I wanted to have with you is that just something that's always going to keep come up with Austin is the way that he handles that athleticism. Is it possible to put him in a spot where he is that far down the game plan when he is sitting at $30 million plus per year on salary?
I think you... Not on a Luka team is my concern, right? Like I didn't have these concerns when it was a LeBron and AD team. You've got size and athleticism. And I think with those type of guys, it can be them, but all four of the other guys have to be average at least to pluses athletically and physically. You can win that, you know, high level basketball, the rock fights that emerge in these 7-game series that if he's your one, he's totally good size for a one and you're, don't have a disadvantage at another place. But if you're, for example, one thing that Minnesota did a lot is sort of a combination attack where it was, we're going to pull Luka out onto the perimeter and attack his foot speed. But we're also going to have Austin guarding, say, Julius Randle down low. And he's going to be the low man rotation. So when we beat Luka off the dribble, which we're going to do, then it's going to be Austin Reeves trying to rotate over to be a low man against McDaniels, who just extends over.
That one stat where it was like most shots defended at the rim and Austin was like a top five player in the postseason.
That's right.
When we saw it. Yeah.
That's Chris Finch and his coaching
staff. I told people that he was a really bleeping good offensive really coach, good coach going into the postseason. And, you know, but yeah, the Austin thing, there's a reason the Lakers look so much better, Pete, when they swapped out D'Lo for Max. And now all of a sudden you had Austin at the one and you had Max being able to go out and defend people on the perimeter. And Austin had some legs left over for offense because he wasn't also, you know, now he does have a little bit more legs when he does get the ball, you know, because Luka is initiating the offense and that kind of helps him to a certain extent, but you're still asking Austin, hey man, can you start possessions on Ant? Can you start possessions or can you, or will you be manipulated into, you know, defending a low man or operating as a low man? Like
we're going to switch a ton. So you're going to end up on Julius Randle a lot, you know?
Yeah. And so, but that again, I think that's a spot where almost no matter what the Lakers do, in terms of personnel, I would hope that the Lakers coaching staff takes a look at their notions on switching to the extent that they do. And, you know, the physicality, like demanding more physicality out of the guys on their roster and, you know, fighting through screens. Or one thing that I really noticed, Pete, that the Lakers just didn't do enough of compared to what I've seen elsewhere is the amount of physicality as guys are getting ready to set screens. So like when you see, watch any team on defense as their guy is getting ready to set a screen, they're bumping him the whole way up. If you're going to set a screen, you'd better like plan to set it 3 feet to the left, because we're going to bump you to the, you know, you're going to hope to get bumped into the spot where you're trying to set the screen. Whereas like you watch the Lakers and it's like,
well, we're going to switch this anyway
off the area. Do you want me to like draw a circle where you're trying to set the screen? Like I think culturally the Lakers are going to have to really rethink the way that they go into some of these games. And culturally or physically or whatever, there are some guys with just some limitations there that are always worth taking into account. But do you think the Lakers will ever, like, I watch OKC, they foul on every play. I'm saying that as a compliment. I said that on Twitter the other day and people did not take it as a compliment, but I swear to God it is. It's like the Legion of Boom Seahawks, right? Where they fouled on every play and they were like, I dare you to throw a flag every single time the quarterback drops back. And do you think the Lakers can develop that kind of mentality, or is that something that's going to have to change with personnel?
Yeah, that's a personnel thing. That's all young players in their early to mid 20s, many of whom that's their calling card. Wallace and Dort and Caruso, even from a number two star standpoint, Jalen Williams is a dirty work player who's having a hard time scoring at a number two type of level, but that's the benefit that you get, is that he's really good on defense for a number two. And you've got all of these guys that's just sort of how they're built. The Lakers prioritize ball handling a lot more than that, or, one moment.
Yeah. I think of like you and Darius laid out a great point in the Rob Pelinka pod that you guys recorded about, like, and I texted you guys this after I listened to it. And it's like every single offseason feels like a reaction to the previous one. And it's, he never really goes into an offseason with like a plan or for an identity. It's a lot of like, all right, last year we didn't have enough shooting. This year I'm getting all the shooting. Last year we didn't have enough ball handling. This year I'm getting all the ball handling. Last year we didn't have enough wings. Well, this year you went into the season with all of the power forward type wings and not enough of like the foot speed type wings. And one of the things that I'm really kind of curious about here, whether they take a hatchet to this team or not, but as you get into the Luka era, I really want to find out at some point the way that Rob Pelinka sees the game outside of the stuff that they need based on the previous season. Rob, what do you personally value? And what do you, because to me, it seems like he really values skill, right? He really values
keeping his job.
That's the kind of joke I have to make, Pete.
I don't work for the team no more. I can say that like that
now. You're absolutely right. You know, his number one priority is that, but like, I still have no idea what he stands for as a basketball mind. And we're how many years into the Rob Pelinka experience, you know, that's not great. That doesn't seem ideal.
Yeah. I think there are hints of it, but there's been a certain amount of trying to recover also, you know, post Westbrook trade and kind of getting back on their feet and getting, you know, back to just a decent sort of theme that I think this is these three transaction cycles. I keep talking about this on the LFR pod of this summer, this upcoming trade deadline, and next summer. It's sort of like a three-part play in a lot of respects that we talk about. Oh, what will the Lakers do? Will it be quiet this summer? It really I'm going to judge it, and I think we're going to learn the answer to that question of what does Rob Pelinka stand for on a basketball perspective over these next three transaction cycles. And so I think it's a story to be understood at the end of that.
The last kind of question that I have here, and I do want to spend some more time talking about the playoffs that we've seen so far, because I think there are some interesting trends at play that are worth noting moving forward. What are the stakes here? Because the reason I ask is because obviously there's the Luka extension or trying to convince Luka to stick around. It doesn't sound like there's going to take a whole bunch of convincing there. He's a loyal guy, right? Even while the Mavericks internally were considering him fat and firing all of his friends, he was ready to stick around and be a Maverick for life, right? So I'm not too worried about Luka taking off. So I don't think that's necessarily at stake. But like, I personally think the Lakers underachieved in the AD LeBron era by Lakers standards, by any other team or fan, you know, like as if I was a fan of like the Vikings and they won a Super Bowl with that kind of tandem or whatever, like I'd be thrilled, but the Lakers aren't the Vikings. Right. And so I think they kind of underachieved with LeBron and AD, and they seemed ready to just kind of run out that string. I want to do whatever possible to avoid, you know, looking back on the Luka era and saying, you know, they wasted too many of those years. That to me is how I like what I think is at stake with this upcoming offseason, whether you position yourself for an immediate bounce back whenever LeBron retires, whether you through some kind of miracle put together a championship level roster this year, whatever it is. I don't want to get back to what we saw from the LeBron AD era, where there was almost a complacency to just say, well, you know, we'll get to the playoffs and we'll see what happens. That I'm done with that. I'm like, that to me is that notion, losing sight of that notion without a greater plan, that to me is what's at stake. But what do you think? What kind of macro level goals or what do you have in mind here for what's at stake here this offseason?
Yeah, I think it's again that bigger picture, decisively making a decision to try to win the next championship that you can. And if you've decided that that's not really this year, then make moves that can help improve things for the next championship, as opposed to just like, you know, we'll win 50 games and we'll be a fourth seed or whatever. And you can keep the lights on and be a very entertaining team with a lot of fun moments and all of that, but not really like making moves to try to get to that level. And so again, just not sort of floating in that in-between space is something that I'd like to see them do, but that might just be the era that we're in right now, is this sort of interstitial between the Luka and LeBron eras. But
there's something you can get from the in-between of the Luka LeBron
era. I do too. It needs to be building toward the next title. That always, to me, has to be at the peak of the pyramid, or the main thing that you're building toward is a championship team. Because I think they can be a competitive team. They can be a team that makes money. They can be a team that checks a lot of boxes that in reality, for a lot of NBA teams, including the Lakers, it matters to not. Yeah, I could say, take a hatchet to the team. Easy for me to say when I'm not. It's not my check at the end of the year that gets impacted by that. And a lot of times that can go sideways in a dozen different ways that, we're just going to break it down and rebuild. And, you know, 8 years later, you're in kind of the same spot. Look at what Utah's been losing on purpose. They don't even have a blue chip young player to go with, you know? And so it can just go wrong in a whole bunch of different ways but that's my biggest fear as a Laker fan right now, Anthony, is that we're this sort of perpetual 50 win team that isn't really a contender.
Oh God, you just made it sound like they turned into the Hawks. the profits are going to matter and let's just get to the playoffs and you'll get the playoff revenue from at least a round and kind of go from there. I'm good on that. What did you think, Pete, of the conversation surrounding the lottery this last week or so, where it's like, whether people are considering it rigged or not rigged, or my favorite conversation that I like to put, like I was laughing at, even on the show by myself, was the people complaining about the flattened lottery odds leading to better teams winning the lottery on occasion. And it's like, that's the point. That's why they flatten the odds, is so that these teams will finally realize, or hopefully realize, that tanking and you know, going through multiple losing seasons in a row isn't actually as viable as it was before they flatten the odds. I feel like a whole bunch of people missed the point there.
Yeah, that was the whole point of why they made those changes in the first place, right? It's supposed to not work out well for you. Although, I will say, I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, but there's been like four times in the last 33 years where a team with less than 2% odds, which mathematically is supposed to only happen once out of every 50 years, right?
Yeah.
If it's 2% or less, that was something that... it was like really Cooper Flagg of all years to right. after the Zion thing, after what was it, Wiggins and
well,
LeBron.
Like the Spurs, I guess, have moved up in every year that they've been in the lottery. Like basically, like, the conspiracy part of this was funny too, because the people who were so adamant about, like, if you're going to try to defend the lottery and how not rigged it is, I feel like the people who tried to do that did a really poor job. You know,
a big accounting firm would never do something that dishonest. Ernst & Young, they didn't get, you know, there was like an ethics, they got fined for like cheating.
$100 million.
Yeah, on their own ethics exam. Like,
yeah. Here's the thing.
Cheat on your own. Yeah.
I don't want my accountant to be ethical.
Right.
I want you to try to get me every penny you can off of it. No, but like, yeah, the Ernst & Young thing. Or like Rachel Nichols was saying, how every so often people do win the lottery and that goes against the odds. And it's like, yeah, but the same person doesn't win the lottery four times in a row. Like, that's not how this is supposed to go. All of that I thought was pretty hilarious. And I just can't. I keep coming back to like this notion of gosh, the flattened lottery odds. It's such a disaster. It's just totally not working. It's like, actually it is. It's these dumbass teams that keep losing on purpose who that's their fault. That's not the
look at what the Pistons just did, you know? Like,
yeah,
yes, they get the number one overall pick. I get that, but there's more than one way to build a team. You don't have to be trash for years and years.
Look at the Pacers, right? Yeah. The Pacers have managed to go from era to era without completely bottoming out, and they've had successful runs in the postseason. They haven't won a championship. And maybe the argument there is that in order to win a championship or get that kind of bona fide star that helps you win that championship, you do eventually need to bottom out. But like, I don't think you need to anymore. Look at
look at Denver. Like, Murray at 7 was their highest pick.
Yeah. Well, you have Jokic, who obviously was in the 40s during a Taco Bell commercials. You had only Ant, I think, is left of number one picks, you know, that or super high lottery picks that are leading their team currently right now. Outside of that, it's like, draft well, develop well. Like, the point that I made on the show the other day actually was like, look, there are very few people more critical than me when it comes to the Lakers organization. But you do got to credit the scouting department, because look around the postseason. The number of former Lakers who were playing really well on these teams, you know, like, I don't see too many former Charlotte Hornets, Pete. Like, there aren't very many. Like, they tried to put one there, but it turns out they lied on his physical. So like, I don't know. To me, the people who were complaining about, the lottery system and how now it's not working and it's not redistributing the talent the way that it needed to. No, the league took a look at the way that they were doing it before, and they saw all of the high end lottery talent that was getting wasted in cities like Charlotte or on the Joe Dumars Pistons, or, you know, like all of these teams around the league. It's like, we're sick of sending the best talent from the college and international ranks to these cities only to see them waste and toil in bad markets and bad situations. Let's actually give some of these better organizations, these better teams, a higher chance at getting some of this better higher end talent, so that it's more those players become more recognizable quicker. I like that decision. I'm not really the biggest Adam Silver guy. I actually like the idea of flattening the odds.
No, likewise. It's again, I think it's served the purpose of kind of exposing those teams. This is not the way out of where you want to be.
Yeah. All right. Final thing before we get you out of here. Any any lessons that you're taking from the postseason as we enter the conference finals, and any kind of larger scale trends that you have seen and potential directions that we're seeing the league go in from these playoffs?
The number of two big looks that there have been, and the amount of zone defense. You watch OKC and Denver, there's been a ton of zone defense. And that was one of the sins of the Lakers' small ball groups. Of if you're going to be a small ball team in 2025 in the NBA, especially come playoff time, you got to have some zone looks to be able to mix in. And every time the Lakers ran a zone, it was just dummy defense where you're sort of in the form and structure of a 2-3, but everyone's lazily got their arms at it. It was not serious defense, you know, and that's something that's really caught my eye. And that's something that a coach has much more of an impact on the game with his defensive play calling than his offensive play calling. And I think we've really seen that around the league. And then, a lot of those two big looks, seeing Tibbs go to Cat and Towns, or Cat and Mitchell Robinson, and Robinson and Achua and Towns, a lot of two big type of groups. There are different ways to break down a defense, right? And sometimes it's you got to just punch a hole through the castle walls with force. And so seeing those veteran coaches go to they go to and how they attack, who they target on other teams. And that's been the same. It's always the small guy or the slow guy. It's
pretty the white much, guy.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes all three are the same person, you know?
Fair. Yeah. Yeah. I think the two big lineup thing is really interesting to me. And that's why I kind of said, I'd like to trade for Claxton and use the TPMLE on a big, because I like Rob said at his presser, and I don't know if it was just a phrasing thing, but he said, we know we need a big, and I'm like, bro, one big? You entered the playoffs with Jackson Hayes.
I think that's how they see it, though, Anthony. I think that they feel like they need one guy in the Jackson Hayes role that's very good, and otherwise they're perfectly happy with. They like that small ball group. It just can't be a 48-minute look.
Do you think you could play small ball with Luka, Pete? I don't think he can.
I do. I think you could play small ball with Luka. Yeah.
My concern with playing small ball with Luka, unless you're putting him in like the middle of the zone and you're just saying, hey, just gum up this area here, read passing lanes, stuff like that. Just get in the way. But my concern is I watch all of these small ball lineups across the league. And they fucking fly on defense. They are moving and they're on a string, and it takes 100% commitment to every single detail and every single, watch the way the OKC and Minnesota close out to shooters and then also get a foot back into the paint if they need to, and then continue to do that over the course of a possession. I've never seen Luka do that in his life.
Yeah. It's a strong argument.
And I'm really concerned. JJ sees the game one way. We've talked about this, I think. Luka sees the game this other way. And I don't know. I'm not saying ditch small ball altogether, but I do think this notion of like, yeah, we only need a big, and then we'll just play small the rest of the time. I think is a recipe for disaster.
I think you're correct with that. I think they need two bigs. I think if they're going to go two bigs, it would be harder to go like the full 25 million type of big like Claxton. And then also an additional resource to get a decent enough player. Like you said, a guy like Adams probably goes for a little more than that. We'd see with Cornette, but it is a certain, maybe Precious Achiuwa is a guy you could get for around that amount, but might be a little bit more. If you're going to go that two big route, do you do two like 12 to 15 million dollar guys instead, and split that up in that type of way? There are a couple of different ways that you can go about doing it, but I think the way the Lakers see it is they would prefer to just have one guy that's reliable at that, and then go with those smaller groups. Your point is correct, though, and Luka's not the only problem.
Yeah,
in that sort of look too, right? Yeah. This applies to LeBron. It applies to Austin. That are you going to be able to fly around with this personnel? Which again, there's a lot of dissonance between the ideas, and we'll see how much Redick is wedded to those sort of ideas, or it was just the team that he had in front of him, like he said.
Great point.
At the end, right? Because he did have a weird team that he probably had to coach the way that he did to just get by with the roster they had. We'll find out a lot this summer.
Yeah, I thought going in, the Lakers would, they would I forget who coined the phrase, but instead of calling it small ball, they said they called it centerless ball. Mm-hmm. And it's like all that produced was being smaller and slower.
Yeah.
And Pete, I just don't know of a sport in the world where you're better off being smaller and slower. I don't think that exists.
That's kind of why I got my hatchet out, man.
Right. Like I look at that approach and you know, now that I've never been a great athlete. I'm 5'10", so I'm not big by basketball standards. I'm huge in like El Paso. I'm a center out there. But like when I was playing in Southern California, I was smaller and slower. And, you know, shocker of all shockers, I didn't exactly play in college, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I'm concerned about JJ's kind of view on basketball and the way that he prefers to coach the game and to see it played. And that continuing to bash its head up against the brick wall that is the way that you kind of sort of need to play with Luka. And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And, you know, like he said, like JJ said at his own exit presser, I need to coach the team that I have in front of me. Well, you need to start with the superstar. You need to coach the star that's in front of you. Mm-hmm. And we'll see if he's able to do that. Do you think he'll be able to, or do you think this is a conversation we'll keep coming back to?
Oh, I think it's a conversation we're going to keep coming back to. I think that one of the things from a first-time head coach, especially one that didn't have any experience as an assistant, is your ideas get stress tested. And there are some things that you believe about basketball that are true about some teams or maybe even most teams, but are not true about your team for whatever reason, based on the personnel that you have. And so different theories of basketball, different styles fit different personnel more effectively than others. And that's part of the fun of this whole thing is that, you know, you can learn some things that are generally true and general trends around the NBA, but what really works for your team that gets developed over time.
Yeah. Well, Pete, this has been fun.
It has.
I think we'll keep on coming back to this. What you and I have talked about off camera and stuff is keeping these shows a little bit lighter. And I don't know. I was working on the trade machine and I got in a dark mood. So like, that's where the mood to this show is. But you know, we're going to be doing these every other Friday or so, or a couple times a month. And we're going to just develop this concept over time. And so if you guys enjoyed this conversation, this concept, hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, and then make sure you guys are following Pete's shows and subscribe to Pete's shows at LFR. One of my favorite things, Pete, since you guys have come to Odyssey, has been listening more to the shows, because I used to like purposefully not listen to other content, mm-hmm. because I want my opinions to be my own. Mm-hmm. But now I'm stealing from you guys like a motherfucker, and it's amazing. It's
free of charge.
All right. So, yeah, that is going to do it for this episode, this week's episodes of the Lakers Lounge podcast. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Have a great rest of your weekend. Make somebody else's. And I will talk to you on Sunday.